Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Thursday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Thursday already?
Thursday already, yes.
Time flies by. Did you know that?
we're having so
much fun. But the only thing is that you get to Friday, it's only 2 days we'll have to be back here. But anyway, we're here and we're going to do our very best to reveal the truth, even though we're going to talk about somebody that actually brags that he doesn't tell the truth all the time.
Yeah.
You know, if it's necessary that lying, he says, is important to protect the truth. So that happens to be somebody who's making a lot of money, or he wants to make a lot of money, and he's been able to bamboozle a lot of people over the years. Everybody knows his name. He's I think it's safe to say, not in a negative way at all, but I think he's a champion neocon.
Yeah.
And it turns out probably hated Trump more than anybody else, and yet he worked for Trump. They said that Trump makes too many mistakes, and he does, and he makes mistakes in foreign policy and doesn't always do what he would like to do. But I tell you what, I think that it is true. He's made a lot of mistakes. But the biggest mistake in this incident, you know, the Bolton's attack on Trump, is the biggest mistake made by Trump was the fact that he hired this guy.
In the first place, yeah.
You know, and there were some that speaking out, I know that made it a point. I know my son happens to have been very much anti-Bolton.
Yeah.
He went out of his way to do harm to him. So sometimes you remember those things in politics. But Bolton's written a book, millions of dollars to be made, and the teasers are out there, and Trump's at his best. He says, well, didn't you sign this agreement? Isn't this a privileged communication? And he probably has some arguments there. And yet then that gets turned around. See, they didn't want to know the truth. But, you know, I was thinking about all the things that have been released so far that it almost is so ridiculous that there are some lies there.
Yeah.
Maybe he'd have been better off letting him go before the committee. He might have had to be a little more cautious because he felt licensed to lie now. But if he was under oath, he couldn't have done this. But no, there is a lot of talk about it. One thing that Bolton said about Trump, he is not fit for office.
Yeah.
Well, I could find a few others that aren't fit for office, and I used to think that there was just a few, but the longer I've looked at it and understood what was going on, I would say it's hard to find anybody that is really fit. That means the job is not fit for the American people. How can you find somebody fit for the office if their job is to regulate the American people and regulate medical care and tell us exactly when we can put our masks on and take them off? Nobody can be fit to do that. So yes, when they're doing illegal unconstitutional things, nobody is fit for that. So I guess I'll give him a little bit of credit. He's not fit for office. But I would say that Bolton is hardly fit to be the top-notch critic on this, because we do have a few things that he has advised the presidents do, including President Trump and others, and they weren't the smartest things in the world. But there is no doubt about it that his interests were probably pretty much totally opposite of ours. I mean, I doubt if he had much understanding or concern about free markets. I don't think he cared about civil liberties, and certainly foreign policy has to be one of his worst,
yeah.
And that's where he had all the influence. So I would say that, I can't find many people really fit for the job, and Trump and Bolton, I don't think, is fit for being the critic and sorting all this out. So you and I are going to do that.
We'll do that, yeah. Well, I think starting off with sort of the overarching thing, and this is from the excerpts that were leaked. I'm sure it was Bolton himself who leaked them, trying to get interest in the book. But sort of in an overarching thematic way, I think he probably has a point, which is that there is a lot of chaos in the Trump administration because there are no guiding foreign policy principles. And he mentions in a Wall Street Journal piece that came out today, an excerpt from the book, that in the cabinet you had people who were sort of pro-China, you had China hawks, you had all these people. And we've read that Trump likes to do this. He likes to have people at each other's throats, and that's probably the CEO in him because it often works that way. So there's probably some truth to that, and we'll go back to that. But that's also a function of Trump himself not really having a foreign policy view rather than just good instincts. But some of the specifics in the book claim, according to a few articles that have come out based on leaks, probably the most serious one would be essentially that Trump tried to get Xi from China to help him get reelected, almost quid pro quo. Here we go again. Adam Schiff's eyes open up from his slumber, and he's ready to go for round two. That's a big one. The other one that we talked about it before the show, I shouldn't laugh, that Pompeo sent Bolton a note secretly while they were having dinner that Trump is full of blank, 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 you know, like kids in class, right?
Yeah.
Trump willing to stop criminal investigations to help the dictators that he liked. That's certainly what Bolton claims. The quote, obstruction of justice is a way of life in Trump's administration. That's pretty hardcore. Claim that Trump didn't know basic geography. Oh, no one is as smart as John Bolton, of course. And the other that, this one, I sort of like this one. I sort of hope it is true. Bolton convinced Trump to support Juan Guaido in Venezuela, but Trump took one look at the guy and said, he's weak. This guy's a wimp. So Trump's responding. There's a lot of other ones. Here's just sort of a survey of a couple of the top ones. But Trump's response, Bolton is a liar. Everyone in the White House hated him. That's probably true, too.
Yeah, right. You know, when this all came out, I thought, well, here we go again. And for some reason, knowing the truth about what's happening, we sort of understand that. But the one thing over and above all, even though I see both sides as less than angelic, you know, but for them to you know, work for somebody and take the job and pretend they're defending their policies and all, then all of a sudden they get fired, and then they are very, very now knowledgeable, and now I have to tell you the truth about what's going on. In a way, you know, they're old slowing honor among thieves. You know, sometimes they have rules that seem to be more ethical on the surface, and even the mafia. You know, they have an understanding. They're bad guys doing bad things, but they have some basic rules, especially you don't rat on anybody in your group. So this is political ratting, I think, you know, to turn on them. So that means maybe we could challenge people who do things like this from the very beginning. Maybe they didn't even have a good understanding, and maybe they had an agenda. Maybe they had, a book agenda or something like this. So they do this, and then they turn on them. I think it's bad. Of course, to me, the solution is not having such an invitation to people to get involved, and then if they do, they ought to be more honorable, because let's say you expect and give an individual that wants you to work with them and give them the benefit of the doubt, and then you get in and they're over the top. And there have been some in our history where they have been over the top in the policy, and the individual resigns.
Yeah.
I don't want to have any part of this. I'm going to resign. And that is what they should do. Matter of fact, not only is that more honorable, it probably has a better impact. It preserves something of integrity for that individual, and it might draw more attention. At least in history, it looks better.
Yeah, absolutely. And resign and then be quiet. You know, don't keep going on. You know, remember Flint and Hillary Leverett, who are on the board of the Ron Paul Institute. Remember, they resigned from the Bush administration because they could not support the policy of going into Iraq. That's how you do it. You know, with some dignity. But so Trump is now threatening legal action against Bolton for the publication of this book. He said there's privileged information, there's classified information in the book. Our old friend Colonel Pat Lang, who was once head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, on his blog, he points out that the book was not submitted to state, because you have to submit, when you have a non-disclosure agreement with the government, when you have a security clearance, you agree to submit these for review, anything that might contain classified information. According to Colonel Lang, he did not submit it to state because state would have torn it to pieces, he said. But Bolton grew impatient with the lengthy time that it took to review the book, and that does happen, and that can be a political issue. So he said, you know, I'm just going to do it anyway. And Lang's take is this is a felony, and the release of the book today completes the elements of proof for the crime. So Lang agrees with him, and Lang actually points out in his piece that he too was waiting for this clearance process for a book, and it can be frustrating. But the go-ahead is, the timing is certainly fortuitous for Bolton and for his goal, which is to make Trump look bad.
Well, and maybe make some money.
Make some couple bucks, yeah, as if he needs
but,
it.
But sometimes these things don't work out exactly as they plan, but we'll see. I can't imagine. Bolton doesn't have as much credibility as some of the other people attacking him.
Yeah.
And so this might backfire on him because he doesn't have a good reputation, and he's never been approved by the Senate for anything.
No, he can't be.
So
no.
Because he knew he couldn't get appointed. But he did make it in into his job with Trump, and he was appointed in April of 18. He just lasted a little over a year till September 19. So it was a short period of time, but he was one of the longest lasting.
Yeah,
so nobody lasted a long time. But he was in important times because there were discussions going on with Venezuela and Korea and different places. And he attended these meetings and had an influence. But I think one of the weirdest things, this has to be based on ignorance, and that has to do with, well, why don't we follow the Libyan model?
Yeah, yeah.
He's talking to North Korea. And we've made this point so often that what Obama did in Libya was so outrageous. Well, it makes the point that if we talk people into giving up their weapons, then we bomb them.
Yeah.
You know, like Hussein.
Yeah.
It was more or less and Hussein comes over and acts like a half decent person, so we kill him.
Yeah.
So, but that's the thing there. So his advice was typical neocon and totally worthless. But the neocons must have mixed feelings about this because even the neocons want to know who's the boss. You know, who's sending the orders out to the neoconservatives.
Yeah.
And you have some conservatives and some liberals, but they're all interventionists and they're all big government. They're all for the empire and they're all for paying for it with illegal money.
You make a good point that actually I'm just thinking of as you said it. He came into that position at a critical time, and he had a very strong influence on some very central themes in President Trump's foreign policy. President Trump wanted to get along with North Korea and wanted to find some way to be the peacemaker. Bolton sabotaged it. As you say, let's follow the Libyan model. We'll kill you. How's that sound? You know, he openly opposed central positions like the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. He left in a hissy fit, or he was fired, whatever, however it worked, because Trump refused to start an all-out war with Iran. So he was there in the center of all these things, and he basically threw monkey wrenches in each one of Trump's smart policies we would agree with. It kind of makes you wonder who put him there and why, you know. But, you know, there's a pattern, unfortunately, of Trump picking people who not only don't follow his policy or agree with his policy, but they openly oppose his policies and they actually openly hate him. And I just wonder in history if there's such an example of a president picking so many people that oppose his policy and hate him. Certainly not Obama, certainly not Clinton that I remember, and probably not George W. Bush. But let's go back and look at a couple of them. Nikki Haley, remember? 2016, as late as 2016, she said, anybody but Trump, I will never endorse Trump for president. She demanded that Trump release his tax documents, tax records, which was a sore spot. And Trump rightly said, in a tweet, of course, the people of South Carolina are embarrassed by Nikki Haley. And then, he hired her to be his ambassador to the UN, where she was a disaster. And more recently, Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, publicly attacked the Commander-in-Chief, publicly attacked the President over this photograph they took in front of St. John's Church. And so did the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, who addressed the graduates of the National Defense University. These are the people to whom the president really legitimately and constitutionally is their commander-in-chief. And he said it was a mistake. I shouldn't have done it. I'm ashamed of being involved in it. And basically denigrated the president, the commander-in-chief, before those people who he legitimately has command over in times of war. So there's this pattern of him choosing just the worst possible people.
Well, this admit there was a little bit of politics in the picture, but can you think of a few examples of presidents using the military, using, you know,
like think everyone.
About, yeah, everyone. And they bring out the whole army. Think about Troop when he was declaring victory forever, mission accomplished,
yeah.
All that stuff. They use the military all the time. So this might not have been good judgment and all that, but to me it was one of the minor infractions. Compared to some of the others. But, issue of hate, I think, is a driving thing. They do hate him. And I don't know whether he has the philosophy, and that might be the reason why we can't figure out why does he do it. Because, okay, he finally figures out that, Bolton's not his buddy. He's not doing it. So they get Pompeo. Now, here the book is revealing that Pompeo is no more loyal than Bolton. So that means it's not the philosophy. If it was his philosophy, he could call us up, and we have our list. We
know exactly.
We have our list. We say, no, we checked him off a long time ago. But no, it's the hate. So they hate his personality. When things were doing a little bit better in the economy, and it was taken out of context and out of proportion, I always thought that they were jealous. The neocons are a bit jealous of Trump because it can't help but just drive them nuts to see what he did for 2.5 years on having tens of thousands of people. And even now, they close them down with, coronavirus.
Yeah.
I sort of think, what if he could get 1 million people out? It just drives them nuts.
Yeah.
And they get angry, and they get jealous, and they get hateful. And it has, and then he slips into this other, maybe he figures, well, that's the only people we know around that knows anything, and maybe I can appease the neocons a little bit, or maybe because he is more militant than we as libertarians are. And so that might go in place. But I think the hatred is the riding issue for various issues. He just, in a way, invites it, his personality invites it. But I do think they're jealous of him. If that might be a stretch, but I think they sort of detest him because he still has a lot of people follow, dedicate him. Sometimes who knows what will happen, in the next couple of months. He may end up with, more supporters than anybody realized. Nobody thought he was going to go anywhere 4 years ago at this time. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, I think that's a good point of jealousy because people are attracted to Trump. They like him. He's a populist. There is literally, I cannot think of a single neocon who's popular, who people like. Everyone hates the neocons. They have the nastiest personality. They look like they have gas problems or something. It's just horrible, nasty people. Nobody sits down and saying, I'm going to watch Bill Kristol today. This is going to be fun. But you make a good point, too, that there are good people. There are decent people. They may not be 100% in our camp as non-interventionists, but they are certainly not John Bolton's. And it's a real shame. And really, the story of the first Trump term, and an article in Axios I was looking at that was written earlier this month. As of June the 6th, in the third year of the presidency, of a first-term president, these are vacancies in political appointments. Clinton had 322 vacancies as of that point. Obama had 288 vacancies as of that point. Trump has 1,397 vacancies. And on one hand, that's good. He's not rushing people into these basically do-nothing jobs. But on the other hand, it means that he doesn't have people in positions that can carry out his wishes, his policies, in key positions. And the people that have remained are old Obama holdovers. And we've seen over and over again, especially if you remember in the impeachment hearings, the people that came up over and over again who would maintain their positions, they were all Obama employees. They all hated him. And to his credit, I think Obama on his first day fired all the ambassadors that were appointed because he knew that, hey, I was elected. I'm going to change the foreign policy. and that's what he was elected to do. Trump didn't do that, and I think we're basically seeing those chickens coming home to roost.
Yeah, the approach that Obama took, it was, you know, much better. But it is the system, because if Trump wants to do this and change things, where does he go? Mm. Just there, it's so messed up. Everybody that knows anything about the technicality of where the paperwork is and where what these jobs are all about, government's too big.
Yeah.
So the solution is shrink it. Yeah. And your suggestion was maybe it's not that bad. Maybe we don't have to fulfill all that. But the trouble is, they can do that. And then things become less efficient. Then people get angry. The money doesn't stop, though. It never stopped. And even canceling Congress for a month or two, it never stops. It's on autopilot. And if Congress even objects, it doesn't matter. They'll get the money from the Fed. The Fed can buy up the stocks. They can buy up weapons. They can send money to foreign governments and have rules and, you know, quid pro quos. Quid pro quos, I think, have existed forever. That's the way government operates. Many times it's really much upfront. That's the way governments work. We'll give you this money and you do this. I was really amazed when it was discovered when I was fighting foreign aid. You know, you visualize, oh, we're going to send so-and-so country $10 billion. So we get the Treasury to send a check and send it over. Never happens like that. What they do is, what are you going to buy? And you're going to buy this.
Yeah.
Oh, and we send the money to airplane company,
yeah.
UPLDs, Boeing. We'll send the money to Boeing directly. So that it makes everybody happy. Except the taxpayer, because they have to believe, oh, we're patriotic, because we believe in the military, a strong national defense, and we need to beef up our military. They've been doing that as long as I can remember looking at election. That's how Kennedy, really, as many times as we cite him for some of the good things he did, he the missile gap. I heard something, the missile gap. And later on, there was actually an admission that there was no missile gap.
Yeah.
So
a pack of lies. Well, we moved into the segment, Dr. Paul, my last couple of statements. It is Thursday, so we've got to do Villain of the Week, and I hope the indulgence of our viewers, because, again, it's Texas-centric. If we can put up that first JPEG. San Antonio leader circumvents Texas ban on fines for not wearing masks with Governor Abbott's blessing. Abbott is caving into people, into these small county judges and such who want to put these enormous fines, $1,000 fine if you don't wear your mask. He said just a couple of weeks ago, no, I'm not going to enforce this. You can't enforce this. You can't do it. No, he's caving. He's caving. He's letting this happen. The railroading. They want a second wave because it's all political and he does not have the backbone to stand up. So let's do that last picture. The villain of the week. Trying to get his mask on, Governor Abbott. I just want to finally say thank you to all the super chatters. Remember, on Monday, we're going to make a list of all of you who did super chat over the past week as a way of saying thank you in our closing credits. So thanks very much. Over you to Dr. Paul.
Very good. And I want to bring up the subject of Venezuela. You know, we talked a little bit about that. And Bolton said that, I think it was Bolton anyway, but somebody made the point, do you know the president thinks that Venezuela is part of the United States? And, you know, but you know what? Think about it. We do think that way. They're part of the empire. We're resenting it. And when did that happen? I think it was Monroe. With Monroe. Oh, well, this is our hemisphere. You stay out. So we've been doing it for 200 years we've been doing that. So this whole thing that Venezuela, you know, is ours, and we resent that. But at least that was written in an article talking about why Trump has this natural instinct. He sort of like a little bit of tough guy stuff. Maybe we have to invade him. And then the interesting thing that Bolton says that the only reason he backed off is when he had a conversation with Putin. And Putin then gave him a little advice. advice and a little bit of notice. Anyway, they backed off, and Trump made the statement, this would be a little bit, this would be cool to go into Venezuela. Well, I think wars are hot, and I think that fighting and killing doesn't achieve anything. I'm much more in favor of emphasizing peace and prosperity through the principles of liberty, and that's why we're here. We're to promote something that we believe is very much an American idea, and that it's something worthy because it entails personal liberty, it entails economic liberty, and it entails non-interventionist foreign policy. And we sincerely believe that that's not going to create a perfect world, but we have a very imperfect world right now. But having this principle, that in total principle, is a perfect principle that we could strive for, the world would be better off. Just think of what it would be like, you know, if everybody said, you know, we don't believe in aggression. We're not going to initiate force against anybody. And, you know, that's how most of life goes on. If you live in a community, small town, 5,000-10,000 people, most people know you're not supposed to steal their cars. And yet, what we live with today is a whole concept. Yes, we still understand that. We don't steal our neighbor's car, even if we need it. But we let the government do it for us. So if you need something, if you need to be taken care of, just think now of how the money's pouring out of Washington to the tune of trillions and trillions of dollars. The welfare benefits can't last forever. And so that is a problem. You cannot avoid the fact that you have to earn what you get. And eventually, a government will realize that you can steal and redistribute. And I think we're fortunate that most individuals know they can't do that with their neighbors. But we need to apply that to the government and get the government out of the business of redistribution of wealth and have a much more honest system that defends freedom. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.